straight down to Belfast, unmarried we shall be. If you have no objections, along with you I'll go. That is, if you'll prove true to young Sally Munro. Well, that being on a Sunday, and a Monday we sought sail, astraight down to Belfast, in a clear and pleasant gale, leading our friends behind us, caused many a tear to flow. Oh, but still I was quite happy with young Sally Munro. Well, that being on a Monday, and the Tuesday thick of fog, when our gallant ship, oh, she struck again a rock. 500 in number to the bottom they did go, and among that great number was young Sally Munro. It was from her aged mother I stole my love away, and that shall check my conscience until my dying day. I'm sorry forever doing so, and I'll mourn till I die for young Sally Munro.
That was great. Thanks, Carolyn. We're going to finish up with a song that Robbie's going to sing and tell you about, and I'd like to tell you that tomorrow's session will be sort of focused. We're not exactly sure how it'll turn out. Frank might or might not be back. I think, Frank, you'll be in form again, hey, in the affirmative, tomorrow, and we'll be talking about real events, real people of both past and present Ireland, and singing songs about them. So we'll see you tomorrow, and hand over to Robbie to finish it off here.
Well, this is something everybody can sing. It's called Red as the Rose. I believe it's an older Irish version of a Scottish song, or at least the tune was used for a well-known Scottish song. You take the high road and I'll take the low road. You know that one? It's very, very similar to that. The chorus goes, Red as the rose in yonder garden grows, fair as the lily of the valley, clear as the water that flows from the boyne, but my love is fairer than any. So if you can help us out on the course. The boyne, by the way, is a very famous river, or infamous river, in Ireland.
This song is great with harmony. Any of you who like to sing harmony, it works out really well with this one.
Come over the hills, my bonny Irish lass. Come over the hills to your darling. You choose the road of love, and I make the vows, and I'll be your true love forever. Red is the rose in yonder garden
Hard to make a distinction between poetry and recitations, and sometimes it's hard to figure out what's the difference. It's certain poems lend themselves to being declaimed in public and are widely accessible. I suppose the use of language tends to be more colloquial, and other poems are sort of deemed, though again this is a very informal process of decision making, they're deemed to belong to the printed page rather than the spoken word. So some of them end up being recited and some of them not, and we call them the ones that end up being declaimed in public as recitations, and the ones that are in the page as poems. The distinction, as I said, is one of more of attitudes of the people than anything else. One of the people who continues to write songs about local events is Robbie here, and I'm putting the onus on him to kick it off today. It's a song he wrote about something he'll tell you about, and it fits very well into the tradition of folk poetry in Ireland of writing songs about things that you wouldn't normally expect people would write about. So, Roberto.
Yeah. Some of you heard this song about 3 o'clock this morning up on the porch, but those of you who weren't there, I'll sing it again. I grew up in a small town called Carrick and Shore in County Tipperary, and a small town of about 5,000 people. Very little of any consequence ever happens there, apart from me being there. Really, prior to the event of this song, the last really outrageous thing that happened there was in the 1600s when Cromwell's army marched through the town. And the song is set at an event in the 1930s. And I'll have to give you a little background. So writing a song like this, you're really doing it for a local community, people who remember the event, and you know, you're not thinking in terms of singing it to a wider audience. So there's a lot of sort of personal allusions and places and stuff that I need a little background on. The GAA, or the GAAs, it's sometimes called for fun, is an organization called the Gaelic Athletic Association. It's sort of like the NFL here. It organizes all the Gaelic games. And they had opened a new playing field in Carrickinshaw in 1932. And in honor of this great event, they decided to hold one of the big games there. It was what's known as a Munster football final. That's like a regional final. And normally there would be maybe 30, 40, 50,000 people at a game like that. So it was a big big event for the town, and they weren't quite sure how to deal with it. But when I was growing up, I used to hear this reference to Ham Sunday, and people always sort of said it quietly, and you never really get anybody to talk about it. And I was a bit intrigued by it, and anytime it was mentioned, somebody would say, shh, or something like that, and that would be the end of it. But I finally pieced it together a few years ago and wrote the song about it. And I had great satisfaction actually in singing it in the locality there, because a lot of people remembered it. And funnily enough, the shh was still going on, because some of the people who were involved in the whole event, who were kind of made fools of in a way, their relatives might be in the audience or something, and some people were actually embarrassed by it, which is very, I thought it was very funny, since it all happened 50 years ago or more. Anyway, I sing this song. Thank you. Twas back in the year of 1932 that a great event happened in Carrickinshaw, where a big match was planned for the new Davin Park and Kerry and Tip for the teams to take part. Well, the news of this match, it was carried all around. 'Twas thought droves of people would flock to the town, and the word it came down from the GAA club, there'd be thousands of people all looking for grub. And everyone thought, here's a chance to get rich. We could make a small fortune in an old ham sandwich. We could charge what we want and it wouldn't be hard. There are so many here, they're all bound to be starved. So the butchers and bakers got busy straight off to make sure everyone would have more than enough. And the valley was full, not of reels nor of jigs, but the smell of fresh bread and the squealing of pigs. And when the great day had at last came around, and an air of excitement pervaded the town, well, the brass band was out and they marched through the park, just waiting for someone to signal a start. There were lookouts and runners in great agitation to warn when the first train pulled into the station. There were signs up all over proclaiming quite clear, the best ham sandwiches are on sale here. Oh, the streets were all full as the tension it rose, and the men were all out in their best Sunday clothes, with the children all waiting this great sight to see, while the women stayed home boiling kettles for tea. There was one poor man full of such anticipation, when he heard what he thought were the sounds of invasion, that he stumbled and fell down the stairs in a fright, but 'twas only some farmer in parking his bike. Oh, they're coming, someone cried, they're here, and the people got ready to raise a loud cheer. But no one understood, no one could explain, when only two people stepped off for the train. So they waited around till the next train came in, and they couldn't believe it was empty again. Then the most of them left and went off to a pub to decide about what they would do with the grub. Well, they argued all day till the match it was over about what they ought to do with the leftovers. And they all were agreed 'twas a wicked disgrace. Every dog in the town had a smile on his face. There was hams in the pantries and hams in the shelves. 'Twas said that some people made pigs of themselves. There was still loads of ham when the week had gone by, but not even a dog could look one in the eye. And now to conclude and to finish this song, for I'm sure I've already been singing too long. Every song has a moral of that, there's no doubt, and this one's no exception, as I'm sure you'll find out. So remember, Ham Sunday, it could be your salvation. Make sure you're not caught in the same situation. For it's all very well being prepared, that I loan, but you're better off cutting it close to the bone.
In the middle of 19th century Ireland, there was a character of fame and renown and well known to Peter Roy, who's standing up against the keeping the whole building up there at the moment. They do that a lot where he comes from in County Kerry, and Peter comes from a place not far from where this man was born, in Derry Nen in the County Kerry, a man called Daniel O'Connell, known as Daniel O'Connell the Liberator, one of the most famous political figures in 19th century Ireland, and a man who whose influence extended far beyond Ireland. He was a brilliant orator, absolutely incredibly deft and proficient at weaving a spell of words that would get vast throngs of people all excited about the cause of Irish nationalism. And he also worked in England on the cause of the Chartist movement and was the founder of the Chartist movement in England. A liberal in many regards, many years before his time. And he's known for many reasons, most of them are political, but one other reason he's well known in Irish history is that he was, to put it delicately, he was a ladies' man of some consequence. And years later, when William Butler Yeats, when the Irish Senate in the early years of the Republic, in the 1920s, they were thinking of having monuments put up to commemorate the fine heroes of the past, and Daniel O'Connell was one of the people who was being considered on the list of the heroic figures of 19th century Ireland. And William Butler Yeats, the great poet, was a member of the Irish Senate at the time when the debate arose about who should be commemorated. When it came to Daniel O'Connell's name, and there was a suggestion that a statue should be erected, if that's the proper word to use in the circumstances, to his memory. William Butler Yeats stood up and said, well, he said, I'm not one, he says, to be puritanical, but you know what you're doing here, that in O'Connell's time, if one threw a stone over a workhouse wall anywhere in the country, one could be sure of hitting one of Daniel O'Connell's bastards. And the monument went ahead anyway, notwithstanding. This particular song was written when O'Connell gave a speech on the occasion of the introduction of the first railroad ever to Ireland. It was a very modest little piece of rail. It ran from Dublin to Bray in the County Wicklow, about 20 miles or so. And but it was a big deal. It was a major event in Irish history, of course. And O'Connell was called upon to be the keynote speaker for the occasion. And he said, among other things, when he was extolling the virtues of this new technological marvel, that the railroad would be the making of future generations of Irish people. And a folk poet in the crowd thought that O'Connell himself was doing a lot in a somewhat different way to ensure the very same process, and wrote a song combining the two metaphors.
Oh,
listen, we'll have to tune them up anyway, so just give us a second or two. This guitar here was built by a man who's making guitars at this very moment down in the lower depths of the main building over there. Wayne Henderson, a wonderful luthier, instrument maker from Rugby, Virginia. And I came here a couple of years ago and mentioned that I was in need of a guitar. And Wayne was here at the time and he made this one for me. I pray, pay attention and listen to what I'm about to relate concerning the couple I overheard talking as I was returning late home from the way. While looking around me, I spied an old woman who sat near a stile just a milking her cow. She was singing a tune they call Haste to the Wedding or some other ditty I can't tell you now. While looking around me, I spied about tinker who only me chance came as throwing that way. And the weather been fine, he sat down beside her. What news, honest tinker, this woman did say. Well, 'tis no news at all, ma'am, replied about tinker, but the people will wish that it never had been. It's that damnable role of a Daniel O'Connell while he's up there in Dublin making children be steam. Our children are by the old woman and Hanneman deal. You see, crazy at last, is there sign of a war or a sudden rebellion, or what is the reason he wants them so fast? Well, 'tis not that at all, ma'am, replied about tinker, but the children of Ireland, they're getting so small. It's O'Connell's petition to the new Lord Lieutenant to not let us make them the old way at all. By this pipe in me mouth, then replied the old woman, and that's a great oath on me soul for to say. Well, I'm only a woman, but if I were near him, I'd bet you me life that his little he'd say. For the people of Ireland is very well known. They gave him their earnings, though needing it bad. And now he is well recompensing them for it by taking what little diversion they have. Well, good luck to you, woman, replied about tinker, and long may you live, and have youth on your side. And if all the young girls of Ireland were like you, O'Connell could lay his steam engine aside. I think every girl that visits this old country should begin making children as fast as they can. And if ever Her Majesty asks for an army, we'll be able to send her as many as Dan.
Is Frank here
yet? Okay, I'll tell you, I'm going to ask Robbie, he's going to spring this one on Robbie. I don't know, he doesn't know I'm going to ask him this, but Robbie wrote another song about a local event that happened to his uncle. You can't get out of this now, they're all of this.
Well, I don't mind doing it. Again, the only hesitation I have is that the local places and everything are not known to you. And there was a song written, as I say, in this case, even the more narrow way, just for the family. Mick has mentioned a few times during the week that my uncles are the Clancy brothers, who are very well known Irish singers here in America, especially back in the 1960s. And it's kind of an interesting family anyway, apart from that. There's a lot of stories came down in the family about adventures of the boys when they were young, especially Bobby. There was lots of stories about him. When I was about 7 or 8, Bobby became a real hero for me because I heard this story about how in order to avoid going to school, he used to lift up the floorboards in the attic and put his shoes in underneath the floorboards and nail them down again and say he lost them and wouldn't be able to go to school. But But the clincher about that one was that the shoe's never found. It's still there somewhere. But there was one particular incident that was never forgotten, primarily because of the efforts of the woman next door, which will become evident as the song goes along. And I assure you that everything in this song is absolutely factually true.
And there's no word of a lie either.
No word of a lie either. I did make one small change. There's a line in it about two old maids, and when I was singing the song at home locally, I used their nickname. This quite common thing in Ireland for people to have nicknames, and these two old ladies were known as Brown's Cows, because they used to go for a walk every evening off around the town. There's what's some expression about Brown's Cows? What is it? I don't remember it now.
Altogether like Brown's Cows.
That's what it is. They were never seen apart. They'd always
all
be
together.
Together
like Brown's
all
cows.
Together like Brown's Cows. They were known as Brown's Cows, but it's one of the changes. The other thing about the song is it's got a very singable chorus, if you feel like helping me out on it. If you can pick it up, it would be good. G. Move the class out into the sun this morning, which is probably what happened. I forgot to mention, this is primarily written for the children in the family, and also to sort of give Bobby a hard time and not let him forget it, rub it in a bit. His clothes and he jumped right in. He swam and he dived like a water hen all around by the island and back again. He lay down in the sun to dry his skin, but he never noticed the tide coming in. And Bobby's bitch has gone up in the tide. The water came in to swept from the side. These bridges got up in the tide. What is he going to do now? And when he got up, he thought all was well. It was 6 o'clock, he could hear the bell. It was time to be heading back home to tea, but his bridges was now gone halfway to the sea. But not being one to admit defeat, a message was sent home to Will. Where a head appeared from the bedroom window, and these words came up from the street below. Sing it with me now. Bobby's bridge has gone up in the tide, and Bobby's gone into the bushes to hide. Bobby's bridge has gone up in the tide, and what's he going to do? But meanwhile, fate had taken the hand. Two old maids came walking along the strand, not wishing to be a witness to sin. They gave him a coat to cover his skin. And Bobby went home and he hadn't a care, and all the people came out to stare. It seemed as if the whole town had turned out, and the woman next door, she began to shout. Bobby's bridge has gone up in the tide. He just couldn't catch them however he tried. Bobby's bridge has gone up in the tide. What is he going to do? But now the story has reached an end. No harm was done, the lesson was learned. Bobby still likes to go out for a swim, but he always brings his spare breeches with him. And the years came on and they passed away, but no one will ever forget that day.
Has Hart made his grand entrance yet? Has he? Frank,
well,
there's no man that knows more songs about real events and real people and local and national, epic in nature, almost interplanetary at times. And Hart's voice is back.
It's just a mere shadow of what was there before. The expression of the people in songs has it takes almost every opportunity it can to extol the virtues of one aspect or another of the people, always in a good light. The songs are never impartial. They are never impartial. They are always partisan. They're our songs, so they are in favour of us, no matter what we do. The Irish have a great way of believing in themselves. They had to. My father used to tell the story of two Irishmen that met, and one said to the other, "Did you hear about the man that jumped 8'6"? And the other Irishman says, "There's no man could jump 8'6". He says, "Your brother John did it." "Oh," he says, "John could do it all right." It typifies the Irish across the Irish. If it was anybody else, well, that's so. We didn't have many victories when we fought. We didn't have much to fight with. So that when we won something, we made sorrow songs about it. And we had a dog in Ireland, a dog called Master McGrath, in 1869. And he won the Waterloo Cup for coursing in England. He went over to England and bet a lot of them. 3 years running. 1 year, 3 years, one after the other, he won the Waterloo Cup. And that's over, 120 years ago. And the song about that dog is still alive today. Now, it's not so much the fact that the dog has won the race. It's the fact that we beat the English. And that was the important bit. The winning, it was the only way we could win at the time.
Frank, can I interrupt for a sec? There's a statue of this dog outside the town of Dungarvan in County Waterford.
You can't let you forget Waterford. Dog came from Waterford. But he was owned by Lord Lurgan. And he brought him over. And the odds he gave was 5,000 to 1. That's what the song said. I'll change the keys. I can't go too high here. 1869 the date of the year. The Waterloo sportsmen did grandly appear, for to gain the great prizes and bear them the war, never counting on Ireland and Master McGrath. On the 12th of December, a day of renown, McGrath and his keeper, they left Lurgan town. And the gale in the channel, it soon brought them o'er. On the 13th they landed on England's fair shore. And when they arrived there in big London town, those grand English sportsmen they all gathered round. And one of them laughed with a scornful ha ha, "Is that the great dog you call Master McGrath?" And another young gentleman standing around said, "I don't give a damn for your Irish trail hound." And another, he laughed with a coarse loud guffaw, "We'll soon humble the pride of your Master McGrath." Then Lord Lurgan stepped forward, says he, "Gentlemen, if there's any amount of money to spend, by you nobles of England, I don't give a straw. Here's 5,000 to 1 upon Master McGrath." And McGrath, he looked up and he wagged his old tail, "Informing his lordship, I know how you feel. Don't fear noble Brownlow, don't fear him McGraw. We'll soon humble his pride and says Master McGraw. And rose to uncover that great English pride. Our master and keeper were close by her side. They have let them away and the crowd cried hurrah for the pride of all England and Master McGraw. And as Rose and the master they both ran along. Now I wonder, says Rose, what took you from your home? You should have stayed there in your Irish domain, never come to gain laurels on Albion's plain. And no doubt, says McGraw, we have wild heather bogs. But you'll find in old Ireland there's good men and dogs. Lead on, Bell Britannia, give none of your jaw. Snuff that up your nostrils, says Master McGraw. And here she went on with a wonderful view. And fast o'er the green fields of England she flew. Rose gave the first turn in the according to law, but the second was given by Master McGraw. And the hare she went on just as swift as the wind. He was sometimes before her and sometimes behind, but he jumped on her back and held up his old paw. Three cheers for old Ireland, says Master McGraw.
She did the bank of Moses.
There, Ireland is divided into several sections. And you have the wild Irish outside of an area known as Dublin. Within Dublin is the educated cultural centre. I come from Dublin. These two fellas come from. These two fellas come from outside the pale, as it's known. You have that expression in America, beyond the pale. That's an Irish expression. The pale was the area that surrounded Dublin, it was the Norman pale. And anybody that was beyond the pale was the wild Irish. And that was the knowledge of it. Within the tradition of songs in Dublin, you have a particular type of song. The Dublin man never takes anything very seriously. If he does, he doesn't let anybody know he takes it seriously. He is sarcastic and he is witty. There was a man back in the last century called Zosimus. Zosimus was a blind ballad singer in Dublin, and he had a prodigious memory. He could listen to a sermon and take it off and come outside and recite the sermon back again for money, get pennies. Or he would write and sell ballads. He wrote a ballad about the finding of Moses. It's peculiarly Dublin, and it is written with the sarcastic wit of the Dublin people. It takes the finding of Moses. Moses was actually found in Dublin. It is not recorded in the Bible that Moses ever visited Dublin. But Zosimus has written the ballad about Moses being Dublin. It's called The Finding of Moses. It's a beautiful method of expressing itself. On Egypt's banks, contagious to the Nile, the old Pharaoh's daughter, she went to bathe in style. She took her dip and she came unto the land, and to dry her royal pelt, she ran along the strand. A bulrush tripped her, whereupon she saw a smiling babby in a wad of straw. She took him up, and says she in accents mild, "Tear needs his girdles now, which he is owns the child." She took him up, and she gave a little grin, for she and Moses were standing in their skin. "Bedad now," says she, "it was someone very rude. left the little babby by the river in his nool. She took him to her old lad sitting on the throne. Das is she, will you give the boy a home? Me dad now, says he, sure I've often brought in worse. Go me darling daughter and get the child a nurse. An old blackamoor woman among the crew cried out, your royal savage, what's that to do with you? Your royal ladies is too meek and mild till we get dishonestly this darling little child. And then says Pharaoh, I'll search every nook from the Phoenix Park down to Donnybrook. And when I catch hold of the bastard's father, I will kick him from the Nile down to the Dodder. Well, they sent the bellman to the market square to see if he could find a slavey there. But the only one now that he could find was the little young one that left the child behind. She came up to Pharaoh, a stranger, Maria, never letting on that she was the babby's ma. And so little Moses got his mammy back, shows that coincidence is a nut to grind. It's very hard to explain that type of language, but in the Dublin Argo, you know, I said to somebody there, it just slipped out today when we were chatting, they were all Exira and Delira. And nobody knew what they were talking about, and obviously you don't either. If you want to say that the whole thing, it was, he was very excited and delighted. Means he was very excited and delighted. But if a Dublinman was saying it, he would say, oh, it was, he was very excited and delighted. But I'd sing a different Dublin song, just see where we're off. Yeah. On the... But you'll understand better than you. It's a song about the maid from Cabra West. And it was written just a few years ago. But this is a Dublin thing. The Dublin man doesn't have the great love songs. The other love songs are the Irish. These were the boys that talk of love. Look at them. You know, they can pour forth all the, you know, from in here somewhere. Here, I think it is. I hope it's from here. All these great expressions of love, you know. But the Dublin man, he just talks about the old mutt. Now that, in Dublin parlance, is the girlfriend. Or it could be, if he says, the old mutt's not too good. He could be talking about his mother. Or I have to go home, the mutt will have the dinner on. That's the wife. But if he's dressing up, and if he's dressed up and he's going out to meet the mutt, well then it's the girlfriend. So it depends on the context which words are used as to, well, I tell you this, on the songs I have at home, I've tried to catalogue all the songs. And as I was making an index to stick into a computer, I had three categories of ballads. You know, I've love songs and songs of misfortune and songs of murder. Songs of murder, songs of assassination, and songs of crime. And when I put it in, my young fellow said to me, see, Dad, what's the difference between murder and crime? I said, it all depends who kills who. If a landlord is killed, under no circumstances could it be considered murder. So that it does, when you're listening to words or whatever, it's dependent on the context. And Dublin has its own context. But this is a song, a Dublin love song as such.